Hi, this is Randall Schwartz, host of Floss Weekly. This week, Dan Lynch joins me. We're going to be talking about Liverpool Makefest and the Teacher of the Year in the UK and how to get open source into schools and a whole lot more things about privacy. You're not going to want to miss this, so stay tuned.
Netcasts you love.
From people you trust.
This is TWiT.
This is Floss Weekly with Randall Schwartz and Dan Lynch. Episode 517, recorded February 13th, 2019. Liverpool Makefest. This episode of Floss Weekly is brought to you by Smart Deploy. Smart Deploy allows IT departments to re-image unlimited computer models from one golden image. Search their library for your models and get 15 free licenses with 1 year of support. That's $720 worth of free IT software at smartdeploy.com/floss. And by DigitalOcean, the simplest cloud platform for developers and teams. Deploy, manage, and scale cloud applications faster and more efficiently with DigitalOcean. Sign up today and receive a free $100 credit at do.co/twit. It's time for Floss Weekly, the show about free, libre, open source software. I am your host, Randall Schwartz, Merlin at Stonehenge.com, bringing you each week the movers, the shakers, the big projects, little projects, projects you may have never heard of and may want to download right after the show, projects you may want to, I don't know, I'll fill something in there later. I got lost somewhere in the middle of that. Joining me once again is the lovely and talented co-host, Dan Lynch. Dan, welcome back to the show.
Hello, it's good to be back. Yeah, it's good to be here.
Yes, and I am speaking to you from my home in Beaverton, Oregon, very soggy Beaverton, Oregon. It's actually flooding around here. There's just so much rain. Luckily, not the snow that they were expecting earlier, because my Z28 is not snow compatible. I would have been taking Uber everywhere this week, but I've been driving around like a madman in the rain, so that's okay, because we're used to that as Oregonians. And where are you speaking to us from, Dan? I bet I know, but go ahead.
Yeah, I'm from a not so wet Liverpool today. It's been really bad weather lately, but today it's a balmy 12 degrees. I mean, I know that's Celsius, so you'll have to convert for your Fahrenheit, I'm afraid. Sorry. But yeah, it's nice and dry, and I'm in my little studio in Liverpool.
Cool. And as of the end of the show last week, I was most distraught, saying, oh my gosh, goodness, I don't have anything but a show from 3 weeks from now. And so I put out the call to you, the audience. I also put out the call to my team to say, what can I possibly do? And Dan, what was your first email reply back to that?
Wow, now you put me on the spot. I think it was, let's do a show about either Ogcamp or Liverpool Makefest, which is what we're going to talk about.
Yes. And so who do we have on today, and how is it related to Liverpool Makefest?
Yes. So our guest today is a very good friend of mine, Caroline Keep, who is one of the founders of Liverpool Makefest, which I won't tell you too much about because I should let her do that when we introduce her in a second. And sure. She's one of the founders of it. She's also UK Teacher of the Year. She's started the first UK school makerspace. I'll leave her some stuff to talk about. Loads of stuff to talk about. We've been talking a lot between ourselves about open source in education, which is a big thing that she wants to talk about as well. So I thought it'd make something nice and different for us to talk about something outside of you know, our usual kind of obscure not so obscure projects that we get into and talk more about wider kind of concerns like education and how we work open source stuff into education and how that impacts the whole kind of thing, really.
And so, Dan, I also want to thank you for bringing this together in the last five days or so. But mm-hmm. on top of that, we went from having that one show that was 3 weeks out to having 8 shows now in the pipeline. So I am much more comfortable now. I'm not panicking anymore. Doesn't mean just stop sending in your requests and questions, because, you know, this show is completely driven by y'all, the audience, you know. And so whatever you want to hear, get them in touch with me. That's the way it works. So we'll go over those 7 other shows at the end of this show, so we can get almost right into the show as quickly as possible. But before we do that, before we bring Carolyn on, This episode of Floss Weekly is brought to you by Smart Deploy. Smart Deploy allows IT departments to re-image unlimited computer models from one golden image. They offer one-click user data migration for simplified migrations, zero-touch network deployment, imaging over the internet, and application deployment to make your project stress-free. Whether you have 50 or 50,000 computers at your company, their patented device driver injection technology combined with technician-built driver packages called platform packs make your life easier. Their library of over 1,200 platform packs includes Lenovo, HP, and Dell, and all other major OEMs. When you need to support a new model, just download the pack and deploy your golden image to any business class computer. Smart Deploy is the most reliable, easy-to-use solution that has been trusted to deploy over 2.2 million endpoints. It's the first and only solution to offer imaging over Wi-Fi, meaning that you can now manage your remote users and satellite offices without being connected to the same network. Deploy images, apps, and updated drivers to your endpoints via the cloud using Dropbox, Google Drive, OneDrive, or OneDrive for Business cloud storage. Step-by-step wizards will guide you through the process, and complicated steps, like SysPrep, are handled for you automatically. Include an answer file to automate tasks like domain join and computer naming for a hands-free, zero-touch deployment. No ramp-up or training necessary. Migrate 100 computers to Windows 10 in under an hour with out-of-box multicast support. Their Seattle-based support team is made up of imaging and Windows experts, and they're just an email or phone call away. Companies like Nintendo, UCLA, and Nissan turn to Smart Deploy to make the dreaded task of computer imaging a bit less painful. And right now, Smart Deploy is giving our audience 15 free licenses with 1 year of support. That's $720 worth of free IT software at smartdeploy.com/floss. If you work at a company with 50 to 50,000 computers, head to smartdeploy.com/FLOSS to get 15 free licenses with 1 year of support. And we thank Smart Deploy for their support of Floss Weekly. And let's go ahead and bring on Caroline. Caroline, welcome to the show.
Hi, nice to meet you all, and hi, Dan. Nice to see you again. It's great to be on. Thanks, Randall.
And I understand you're not that far away from Dan right now, right?
No, I'm not. I'm not. I've come round to Dan's house because I was like, you know what? I'm probably new to this one, so can you just run me through this? Because both of us live within the district of each other in Liverpool, so it was really easy, this one. So, I thought to myself, I'll just come down and he can run me through the whole process. So,
awesome.
It's really nice to be on.
Well, so we talked a little bit about Liverpool Makefest to start with. Let's start with that, and we'll get to some of the more other interesting things about you. So let's talk about Liverpool Makefest first.
Liverpool Makefest is three of us decided to put on a festival for young children and adults and families in Liverpool Central Library about 5 years ago. Me, Denise Jones, the head of the library, and Mark Felton from Liverpool JMU. And we decided to put it on to get kids interested in projects and open source and technology in general, some of the interesting more industry four skills. And we thought we'd ask a whole bunch of people to come and show what they were doing. And we thought we'd get like maybe a few people, maybe. And we ended up with about 70 individuals coming to show, 70 stalls on. And about 6,000 people turned up. Since then, wow. It's our fifth birthday this year. We've had over 20,000 children through it now. And we did a year-long project with the Libraries Innovation for Everybody Fund in the UK. And that has expanded it out across the Liverpool region. So this year, we go across all of the libraries in the country. So I'm encouraging anybody to run, if you're in a library in England, there's a fund for you to run your own Liverpool Makefest or anywhere else that you want to run.
Yep. I was going to say, does it have to be done really quietly such as a library, though?
No. No. The idea that libraries are quiet places. No, we've had Daleks in there, we've had stormtroopers in there, we've had yarn bombing in there, we've had all kinds. So it's never quiet on that day. It's the one day of the year where the library suddenly is not quiet. But to be honest, most of them aren't quiet in Britain now anyway. Digital is part of their offer. So a lot of them are very noisy. I was just training librarians yesterday to do robotics with kids in libraries. So I was training them for free to open source that. So yeah, it's quite noisy in there these days. And it sits in the ethos of things to do with things like FOSS and you guys, because obviously it's a library is there for everybody, so anybody can access it.
Cool. And for those of us who have never been to a MakeFest before, what should we expect to see when we get there? And should we also expect to be required to get our hands dirty and actually play with stuff?
Yeah. You can't. It's not required. You can go around and have a look and talk to everybody, but majoritively it's encouraged. There's normally a lot of workshops going on, so it's we have things like underwater robot workshops you can get involved with, or we've had drone workshops that you can get involved with. So there's normally a lot of electronics, but then there's a lot of art, craft, sewing, knitting, anything where people are making things and want to share what they're making. And preferably, we encourage them to share resources and share ideas about what kind of things they're doing. So, yeah, it's if you went there first time, you'd find a whole bunch of kids. So we get a lot of young people doing stuff. So that's really nice.
Mm. When these started, I believe they were more oriented towards Arduinos and things like that. Has it moved away from that over years?
Yeah, it has. I think when we started, we were very into it. I was very into Arduino. I was using it a lot in teaching. And then, you know, we had Microbit and Raspberry Pi came along, and we were very much into that sort of thing. And over the years, it's very much shifted now to us looking at incorporating those kind of technical and tech skills into other areas. So, you know, using art or using dance and combining them with things like, you know, sensors for electronics, so you can have dance that lights up. So we're incorporating some of our more traditional STEM aspects into things that are more artistic. And that's been really popular, and I think that's made it more accessible for people who aren't necessarily into tech, so that, you know, software is not normally their thing, coding's not normally their thing, and they're coming along and going, oh, well, actually, I'd really like to involve it in my embroidery, like I was having the chat this week with. And that's accessing a lot of people that we wouldn't normally reach. So I was having a discussion with one of our librarians I was training about how she wants to put, you know, hands-on electronics into her embroidery. So she's about elderly lady, so she's retired, so she's probably about 70, maybe 80, and she wants to learn that. So it's making it more accessible for more people, bringing that level of diversity to tech.
Do you have I know that Aaron runs the Benicia Makerspace. Do you have a makerspace that's associated with this event?
I do. I started my event before I associated my makerspace, but in the traditional sense, we went to our local makerspace, which is Does in Liverpool, and they supported us very much so with that. They're a brilliant makerspace in Liverpool that me and Dan both are part of. And then we also have another makerspace in Liverpool City Centre called Make that's been quite good in supporting us. But obviously, I run my school makerspace, which I opened in my third year of MakeFest, which is now at Spark Penketh, which is the first school makerspace in the country that's embedding into the national curriculum. So I tend to run both simultaneously. I have a big team that helps me with that. Dan's run MakeFest for the 5 years you've been involved, Dan, which is a nice trade, seeing as Dan does Og Camp. So I ran Og Camp's open hardware hack for him in 2015, and I am doing this year. So we tend to work as teams to work together to achieve the best that we can for our communities.
And would a makerspace be a good place for, say, that person who wants to embroider some sort of digital hardware into something, be able to find someone to handle the other side of that, like the computation and the programming and things?
Yeah, that's the exact idea. So you can turn up to a makerspace and effectively, you know, one person will be able to look at it and go, well, I know the technical skills, and that I'd be able to, you know, do the coding part of that. And then somebody else may go, well, I've got the embroidery skills. You know, it's this kind of cross collaboration of skills between sometimes the more traditional sort of crafts and some of the more modern ones. And that's where you get the best stuff. So I was at Does yesterday for the Wearables event that we host once a month. And Jackie's dealing with, at this moment for me right now at Does, the idea of lighting up and sensing in a handbag that I wanted to do just for fun, this one. And I'm dealing with the sewing part of it for a change. So it's kind of nice that you kind of get that exchange between the two. You don't have to be technical to be involved in a makerspace. You can have any other skill that you want and bring it to it, and it can be incorporated anyway. And I think you do learn a lot from that. Being in that environment, you generally pick up those kind of technical skills.
I want to say congratulations on the UK Teacher of the Year Award. That's obviously a prestigious thing to get.
Yeah, it is. It was a bit of a big shock, that one. So I'm just coming round to the end of this now. So Tess, the Times Educational Supplement, who gave me that, is about to nominate the next one. It's been quite impactful to get it. I was a bit shocked that I got it, to be honest, because you just don't expect, out of all the amazing teachers that are out there doing their job every day, that you'd be the one that ended up with that. So, and I was nominated by my community for that. So I was very pleased the fact that I'd obviously served them well enough to deserve a nomination. So yeah, it was really, really nice.
Well, as someone that's got the dual responsibilities of being both a technologist and an instructor, a teacher, what do you see the biggest challenges there?
I think at the moment, one of the big things that me and Dan have been talking about recently, and one of the biggest challenges I think we've got right now, is the mass commercialization of ed tech. So at the moment in the UK, it's worth $900 million per year. And, you know, worldwide, you're talking quite a lot of money now is going into educational technology. And with that comes a whole bunch of things that I don't think teachers necessarily know or have thought about. And my biggest concern at the moment is data privacy. So we're using more and more. We're being given free software, and it's not really free software as in freedom software. It is not open source software. It's proprietary software that then captures a lot of our students' data. And we're not asking enough questions about where that actually goes, which is one of the reasons why I've been so adamant in us using, trying to encourage the use of FLOSS software now, because we can see it. It's very clear exactly, you know, what is going on with the software, where exactly our students' data is going to, and exactly, you know, how the security of that's run. And you can teach your students about things using it. At the moment, we have a lot of the tech companies are, you know, very heavily marketing to schools. And that's using technology that then you end up with this situation where you don't know where that data is going. And the Children's Commissioner in the UK, and we've had GDPR here, has just recently came out with a report saying, you know, what do they know about me, it's called. And it was a in-depth report to encourage all schools to start teaching the kids about data privacy. And she investigated a whole bunch of educational-based stuff and just general apps, social media, connected IT, toys, the lot. And the report's quite damning. Her phrase was, it's on the cliff edge for most children now. So by the time that they're hitting 18, there's over, you know, 700,000 images of the average young person now. And you're having this, they're calling it share parenting, where parents are sharing things as they go along, but not really thinking about the implications of that. And then because you trust a school as an institution, you don't really question the use of your school in whatever software or they were using. And one example she gave was Class Dojo, which is used by 70% of schools in the UK. And yet it's proprietary software, and it currently shares with 31 other businesses and industries its data. And the list of things it collects is quite frightening. And it's an app that's designed to monitor behavior, whether your children have been good, gets them good points, whether they've been naughty or not done what they've been asked, gets them minus points, and it's behavior tracking. And it collects everything. If your child has got it, or you've got that, it can collect things on, if it's on their phones, if they put it into their phones, if they want to see where they're up to with the behavior points from their teachers, then it takes location, it takes data, it takes names, it takes the behavior, it takes a whole bunch of data that then gets shared out to 31 other companies that is not very clear where that goes. And the Children's Commission has been quite critical about it. And that's in the UK now, but it's just sort of coming to a head, and we don't expect teachers, or, and I don't know whether we should expect teachers to have a really good understanding of data privacy policies. But we're the gatekeepers to that information. And I think we have a responsibility to be able to say, well, is this in children's best interests? Because you don't tend to question it. And when me and Dan were at FOSDEM just recently, I had a good chat with a whole bunch of people that were there. And quite a lot of them, even though they were in FOS networks and they were at FOSDEM, had very little understanding that the same software that they were saying we should use open source proprietary software and we're promoting it, it's a big part of our culture. When I was saying to them, what about your kids at school? Have you ever asked your school what software they use? Mm. They were going to me, no, I've not. And it was like, well, maybe you should ask your school what software they're using and just check exactly what actually they are getting into, because they are being given things for free and not necessarily understanding whether that is free or not.
Wow. Yeah. Hey, so we could spend the whole show talking about 1984, but every year is
really
1984.
Could.
I do have a few more subjects I want to cover before the end of the hour, though. So one of the things that's happening here in the U.S. is we have increasing classroom size, and STEM seems to take the biggest brunt of that, of the problems with that. Also because finding good teachers, the teachers are competing with, actually using their engineering skills in commercial applications instead, go out into the real world. Is that same thing happening in the U.K.?
Yeah. There is that's the same thing that's happening worldwide. There is a massive teacher retention problem, and there is a very big teacher training problem. You know, these are people working in the public sector, often getting paid these days a lot less than they deserve. And when you have somebody, who's a trained scientist, I'm a physicist, I teach physics, that then could go out and earn that a better salary in industry for a lot less stress, they are opting to do that. And even when we've been giving them bursaries to train them, very often our teacher retention just drops off after 4 or 5 years because the pressures of the actual job, because of increased class sizes, because of lack of teachers, is putting pressure on them as well. So it's a worldwide problem, this is. And they're going to see this even more. So a lot of teachers now are being trained in Britain and leaving Britain for other countries that offer better benefits or an easier management lifestyle because they've got smaller classes, or where respect for teachers is much higher, which then leads to the question, where are we going to train this generation coming up?
Mm. Yeah, and one of the things, I mean, knowing you as I do, Caroline, and seeing how much work that you do, you always seem to be working. And I know teachers generally seem to be overloaded, and it leads into the whole thing about class sizes and all the other things. What do you think is maybe one thing that could be done to help retain teachers more?
I think for retaining teachers, in Britain, there'd have to be, and some of the more prominent teachers are calling for this, for a reframe of our teacher standards. So in Britain, there is a expectation of standards that teachers keep and a framework we keep for Ofsted that they then judge schools by. Quite often, there's a lot of administration that goes with that is not necessary. That we look at and we go, is that really something we should be doing? So quite often we do a lot of data collection that's replicated and replicated for these things. And we do exams and we do marking that's in a particular line with things like Ofsted. And it's causing teachers stress, the administration. If you were to ask me, I love to teach and I love to teach young people. And I'm very fortunate that I am in a very strong school with a good ethos. But even at moments with me, you do find this where you kind of, who am I doing this for? Is this really for the kids that I am actually teaching? Or is it for somebody to judge whether what I'm doing is good enough whilst not doing much about it? So you kind of, every single step of the way, you've got to ask yourself, is that in these students' best interests? Or is that something to be able to be accountable? And I think education's a very big political football. And that totally gets in our way. It should not be really in the political domain to be deciding or showcasing the educational trophy parts of, you know, we've improved education this much, or we've done this much, because every single year somebody comes in Britain, and I'm sure it's like this in the States, and reforms part of what they think is education. So we're always under continuous reform. So nobody can ever really get on their feet to do a good, a really great job of anything, because they need time to, you know, really teach well. And if they're continuously reinventing the curriculum, then there's no time to teach a great, you know, lesson, because you're continuously rewriting everything.
Yeah, so that's a big issue, isn't it? I've done adult training, which is different, obviously. I mean, you have, it's a different set of challenges, I suppose, to teaching kids. But the changing of the requirements, if you like. So as you say, you're trying to hit a moving target. If they keep changing the outputs, for want of a better word, that they want from the bureaucracy want from the education standards and so on, then as a teacher, you're spending more of your time not actually teaching the classes and having to redesign the classes all the time, which is a hell of a lot of work.
Yeah, I think it is. It is a lot of work to do that. We had a recent complete reform under Michael Gove's system that has gone to the baccalaureate, and it's forced out most of the arts. So now most of the arts has been forced out. A lot of the DT has been forced out, and the more creative subjects have been over science, maths and English. And that's in response really to a worldwide shift in some of the countries have gone up the table in maths and science, and Britain's come further down. So we'll prioritise this and we'll force out the arts. But in doing that, now there's been a big call for why, you know, we need creative skills. So they'll bring that back now, and they'll say to us, well, you need to prioritize that. And it is a continuously shifting target. And really, we have to be asking what's in children's best interests anymore. We're not producing kids. 10 years has been since Ken Robinson did his pivotal TED talk on schools aren't fit for purpose. And he did it in Liverpool. And it's not much has changed in that time. We're still producing young people that aren't necessarily ready for those kind of moving, more fluid jobs of the future.
Yeah, and we've got actually, so our IRC channel is chatting away here, as they always do, as we're broadcasting live. And we've got a question from Reverb Mike, let me try and say that right, in the IRC channel, who says, who asks, are the kids being trained for jobs that will be outsourced in the future?
I don't even think they're being trained for jobs that will be outsourced. I think they're being educated to a standard that is to pass the exam. And I think they're not necessarily getting those key sort of industry skills that would allow them to thrive in any way. I'm lucky in our school has took the tact of putting in a makerspace with a embedded framework to give them those kind of skills, industry four skills, that are the kind of jobs that are going forward, to make sure that they've got that kind of view. But I think you are going to get a lot of the training in older ways and in a system that is designed for something that we don't have anymore. There's no such thing as permanent job security anymore. You know, nowadays the average person has, you know, at least 7 jobs by the time they're 35. So the idea that you would train as one thing is quite rare now. So we've got to create kids that are more adaptable than this.
Which will require even more education and everything too, which is sort of a self-defeating spiral, but I'm sure you're working on it, working well on it. But before we continue, I do have an important message, because this episode of Floss Weekly is brought to you by DigitalOcean. Easily run production applications with DigitalOcean, a scalable compute platform with add-on storage, security, and monitoring capabilities. Whether you're running one virtual machine or 10,000, DigitalOcean has you covered with the flexibility to customize standard or CPU-optimized droplets. Set up SSD-based virtual machines in 55 seconds or less. Capture backups and snapshots. DigitalOcean is designed for developers. The easy-to-use control panel and API let developers spend more time coding and less time managing their infrastructure. Use Kubernetes to improve the availability, scalability, and resource efficiency of containerized apps. Industry-leading price performance. Access the compute resources you need at the lowest rates, saving up to 55% compared to other cloud providers. Know what you'll pay monthly with a simple, flat pricing structure. And included at no additional cost. 99.99% uptime SLA, cloud firewalls, full DNS management, 12 global data centers, free round-the-clock tech support. Join over 150,000 businesses, including some of the world's fastest-growing startups and my own, Stonehenge.com, who rely on DigitalOcean to remove infrastructure friction and deliver industry-leading price performance. Sign up today and receive a free $100 credit at do.co/twit. That's do.co/twit for a free $100 credit. DigitalOcean, trusted by businesses, loved by developers. And we thank DigitalOcean for their ongoing support of Floss Weekly. So I want to talk some more about MakeFest here. Again, I'm seeing you said, like, was it 8,000 people were in the library?
It's about 6,000 in a library on the day. It can be anywhere from 6 to about 7, dependent. Some days, if we do the event and it's really sunny, it can be really packed and very hot among a lot of books. But it depends. But over the years, we've had about 20,000 through. It's quite a big event. Yeah, you do get really hands-on. And it's great to see kids engaging with kind of technologies and being able to see what kind of things they could do. And also, I encourage a lot of teachers to come so that they can get some support from industries and specialists who are out there so that they can have that kind of relationship where they can say, oh, I've seen this that you're doing. That's really great. You know, can you show me how to do that? Quite often, makers are very open source like that. So they will quite happily share what they have, and especially for education. So, yeah, it's a really great event. I'm very proud of it.
And with that many kids, I'm presuming these are all mostly high school age or younger, there must be some resources that are limited. Do you ever get into, like, trouble because two or three people want the same thing?
Yeah, we have quite limited resources. So when we do workshops, we have to put them on rotation so that everybody can get through them. So, and we're quite lucky that the maker community comes out in the UK quite in force for us. So they often prepare their workshops. They bring the resources. They bring the kit. We very rarely bring anything other than we bring stands and food and we bring support to do this and a location for us all to be in. So everybody contributes to this one. It's a real team effort to come out and do a MakeFest. And I'm very delighted to see them popping up over in other areas of the UK now. So we've got MakeFest Stoken, we've got MakeFest Whittles ongoing, and we've got MakeFest Chester just happened not so long ago. And people are putting on these kind of, you know, hands-on workshops for the kids in their communities. So it's a really nice one. So we haven't had to worry too much about resources other than making sure that we feed everybody.
Yeah, I was going to say, is there a sponsor for that, or how does that work?
We've relatively shied away from sponsorship, majoritively. Unlike Og does very well at sponsorship, Dan does quite well getting his, so he runs his very nicely like that. We've shied away from it because we wanted it to be very much for the community, but we do take sponsorship if anybody wants to sponsor. It'd have to be obviously in the right sort of ethos, because we've had bigger sponsors come to us and we've said to them we're not sure whether that'd fit with the same feel of a open source free event. We've took a very big funding from the National Arts Council in previous years, and we normally support artists and digital creative people with that across a year that they can create some things in their communities, or businesses and industries we know are doing things in their communities to do open source things with. So we put that through the National Library. So that's been good. But the library's been incredible in the support. Denise Jones, though, is absolutely amazing to try and do that. But quite often, no, those first 2 years, we, the three founders solo funded it the first 2 years. And then Awesome Liverpool, who is a community board that get together to fund things for £500, funded as well. So my first year, I funded straight out of my PGCE fund. So I was a trainee teacher funding a festival. It was quite interesting. And then the second year, we took an Awesome fund. So that was £500 that paid for it. We ran it on £800. And then it was Art Council funding and library funding for the last 2 years. So this year, I haven't quite worked it all out exactly where we're doing our funding. So if anybody would like to sponsor an open source event for kids, please let me know. But yeah, we want to make sure that it is representative. The last thing we wanted it to be would be, you know, a very big corporate brand branded on something that a lot of kids are going to. So it's quite important to us to get the right people for that.
And let's say I'm inspired enough by what you're saying, and I'm also apparently insane. How would I start one of these?
I'm actually writing national guidance to how to run your own Makefest. So I'm about to finish up that. We're about to put that out open source, how to run your own Makefest, what to do about it, and where to run it. Your libraries are a really great partner for that. No matter where you are, I guess, in the world, because all of them are a location that's designed to be, you know, accessible for everybody. Everybody can use the library. Everybody knows the library. So we're putting that together to say, how would you go about doing that? First thing I'd say is find a location, find a library that will agree to it. Show them the stuff that we're doing and show it how it's gone. Go check out our website. It's at the bottom there. And then basically say to them, this is what they've achieved having an open source festival like Liverpool Makefest. And then once you've done that, you've got to go find the community that is around your library that is all doing creative, innovative stuff. You know, there's always people in communities everywhere doing things in digital, doing things in tech, doing things in open source, doing things in art. All you got to say to them is, can you come along and show what you're doing to some kids for the day? That's it.
And I presume some of the older kids are sort of leading the way on some of the areas, right? And are you also then actually giving any presentations, maybe pop-up presentations or maybe something like an unconference?
Yeah, we did. We've done a few. I did a specific one with Edgehill University that was directed just at teachers. That is Make a Noise, which is one that was just solely for teachers to come to see what people were doing to get a bit of training so that they could get more kind of into using some of the technologies that we use or software that we use so they could then spread that out among their schools. We'll be doing that again this year towards the end of the year. And we on the day, we do talks on the day, and we've encouraged people to do, we do a cozy conference run by the Liverpool Ignite team. And we've had lots of talks go forward. We get a lot of young people. Our most favourite young person has got to be Joshua Lowe, who did All About Code, who is came to Makefest when he was 11 and built EduBlocks. So he's been an absolute inspiration. He's a lovely young man and has done a lot with Les Pounder, who's also in the UK. He does a lot of stuff for Raspberry Pi. So he's been a real inspiration coming along and then not being really into the kind of thing and now is creating his own, you know, software. So
So with Josh as well, it's worth mentioning that he went to the PyCon. He got invited by Google to PyCon in the US, where he met Guido and the, you know, creator of Python and all these other people, and gave a talk to like 3,000 people, all off the back of coming to Makefest and getting inspired and getting involved in his local makerspace, and then building this tool, open source tool called EduBlocks. So if anyone's interested, or any young people watching who are like, well, you know, I'm not never going to get into that, it's amazing what you can achieve. You know, he just started doing this in his bedroom. He came along and got involved with the group, and then, you know, 3 years later he's being invited to by Google to go and give a talk. So incredible.
Yeah, we've done interviews with him several years. He'll be doing some stuff this year. We're very proud of him. But obviously there's examples. We've got quite a lot of examples of young people who then go on to do projects of their own, and I quite like young people to own that project and make it their own. And if they want to demonstrate, we do have a lot of schools demonstrate at Makefest. So we quite enjoy putting a school next door to a software developer or a school next door to, you know, Ultimaker or the Create Education Project, you know, so that they have, you know, a school project could be next to an industry leader. So I think that's an important thing to keep it quite egalitarian across Makefest. Nobody gets kind of extra tables. Everybody gets the same sort of thing, so that it brings that kind of leveledness to an event.
So I want to ask a bit more, Caroline, about open source in schools, because it's not going to shock anyone who's seen the video of this show to learn that it's a while since I've been in school. Probably fairly obvious from looking at me. But when I was at school, we didn't even talk about open source software. This was kind of mid to late 90s, so it's not that long ago. And open software was out there, Linux was around. We never talked about it. We didn't even know it was there. We just learned how to use, you know, Microsoft Office and things of the day, I suppose. What kind of stuff do you are you teaching anything, you know, on open source software? Do you teach anything with Linux in schools? What are the kind of barriers to that?
There's quite a few barriers to it at the moment. I mean, we use Raspberry Pi, so we teach Linux in our schools. We've been using stuff, you know, our web browser is DuckDuckGo. So, you know, exactly. It's kind of one of those. We do talk about it. We're looking right now. I've been looking at open source projects that our students want to pick a few open source projects to do more contributory to them. We do things like citizens-based science, so we get involved in kind of contributing our part to that. There's quite a big culture of it going forward, but I think it's still very much in its infancy. I've not seen mass amounts of adoption just yet, and even as forward of thinking a school as us is just getting to grips with the whole idea of trying to get all our software changed into as much open source as we can, and all of the projects that we do with our kids referencing that they can contribute to this. I think there's big barriers to it because the school systems, and I'm sure it's no different in the US, are still quite entrenched in proprietary software. So the natural view is, you know, we think open source software is something that's, you know, quite difficult to manage or is not as widely used. So there's still a lot of misconceptions to get around. But my students have been very, very interested in open source software. And I think the interest has very much come about because we've been starting to teach them about the value of it and data privacy issues as well. And saying to them, you know, you can contribute to open source software, and also it breaks up this issue of your data privacy as well. And you can see exactly what's going on with it. And it's a way to get involved with the community in a real way, instead of just, you know, we just practice a bit of, you know, Python in computing and that's it. Instead, they're actually contributing to a wider society. So my lot are currently deciding, because it's our students direct our makerspace, they've took a whole range of open source software projects that they're going to be deciding which ones they want to participate in as a full-blown project. So we'll see what they decide. They've been taking some interest in some of the stuff I brought them back from FOSDEM. So let's see how that goes.
Excellent. And obviously, I'm incredibly biased, but being that we're on Floss Weekly, it's the right place to kind of mention this. I think the advantages of teaching people in the kind of open source methodology or open source software is that, you know, they can see how it works. It's like, if you think about engineering of any other kind, you don't give people a black box with, you know, they can't access to learn how it works. They have to be able to see how the stuff works so they can see the code. They could contribute to it, as you say. They could do all kinds of other stuff, you know, pull it apart, break it, fix it, all that kind of stuff. Is that an advantage?
Yeah, I mean, it is an advantage because you can teach them about, you know, whatever software it is that we're using, so Linux, you know, and LibreOffice, you can teach them about how that works as well as have them use it, you know. So that's a massive advantage. But also, there's no licensing fees. So schools pay a lot of money for licensing fees, and they pay a lot of money that could be used for better things. So it's not only a better educational way to do this, but it's also financially, it's much better for your school. There's less security issues because they often get fixed much quicker. They're not saying you've got a problem 4 weeks later after the problem's been suddenly all over the news. It's much more fluid to fix those kind of issues. So for things like our children in our schools, I think that's an important part to make, that they want to be able to see exactly what's going on. It should be more transparent. In every other area of our schools, we expect transparency. We expect them to be transparent in their funding to the local governments. We expect them to be transparent in, if you go into your child's school, you expect to be able to walk around it, ask teachers about it, go into lessons, look in books. You can be any parent that goes around and asks any question of any school. Yet our software in our schools is somehow cut off.
Yeah, it's a strange one. It is a definitely a strange one. And Randall, I'm going to reveal it. Randall just told me in the chat room there a much better use of that metaphor. He's better at this than I am. But what he was saying was basically, you know, when kids are learning auto shop, as they call it in America, like, you know, mechanics, they have to use the wrenches and stuff. They don't just drive cars around and then get out of them when they break and go, somebody fix this. You know, you have to see how the stuff works.
I think that's why we heard when we were both at FOSDEM that there was this decline in open source software, you know, that people, there's not as much of it, you know, and that there's more proprietary software. And I think a whole bunch of that is probably because we're not educating anybody about open source software. So they are coming out of school, going into university, training in, you know, computer science or doing various degrees, and then only realizing later that there's such a thing as FOSS. So if we can't educate these young people young, then they have no understanding. And it's the same with teachers. To them, there's free and there's free, and they're both the same thing, aren't they? You know, to the average teacher, Google Classroom is free, or, you know, various educational platforms are free. ClassDojo is free. They don't understand that there's a difference between free and, you know, proprietary, where we take your data and you can't actually see what we're doing with it. So they don't see the difference. So there's a big thing we've got to do with education to make this more accessible.
Yeah, that's a big issue that I run into quite a lot. It's the whole, we had this discussion before about free software, which to a lot of people, you know, means free as in freedom or free as in speech. But if you say that to the average person, they go, oh, so I don't have to pay for it. Or as Randall says, Libre versus gratis, which is kind of different. Mm. So it's a bit of a strange one. I always think, and maybe I'm just a cynic, but I always think if someone's giving you something, you know, if someone comes to your school and says, hey, have all this software for free, you don't have to pay for it. Why are they doing that? If they're not a charity and they're running a company, there must be a reason. But maybe I'm just inherently suspicious. I don't know. Well, I certainly look suspicious.
I don't think actually these days you'd probably be classed as suspicious. You know, there's been quite an outroar in the US among these things happening. You know, there's quite a few teachers now are coming up and saying we should question this a bit more. You know, and you've got in the US, here in the UK, we've got the GDPR, which is just coming to force. But over there, you've got the COPPA, which is the Children's Online Privacy Laws. But they were updated in like 2013. So, you know, that they aren't reflective of the society we live in anymore. So, you know, you've got to be quite, I'd probably say you were quite accurate to be a bit wary. And if we go for FOSS software, then we can see exactly what it's about. Our students can see what it's about. And then that way they can make their judgments, you know, with perfect transparency of things, which is kind of the way it should be. I don't suddenly rock into my class and suddenly say to them, I'm going to not tell you what this entire lesson's about. I'm going to, you know, keep it in here and you're going to have to guess about the whole thing. You know, you don't just go in and go, I want to teach you this, but I'm not going to tell you what any of it's about. In fact, you're going to have to guess whether this is biology, chemistry or a physics lesson, and then later on I'll reveal it to you. What we do is we go in and we work with children. The best teachers work as a team. So we talk as a team and we work as a team and we say and we work towards a common goal of getting a good set of grades and a good set of results. So, you know, we have student councils and student committees. So to then not have the...
Sorry, I think my connection dropped for a second there or something. I'm not sure what happened. But anyway, very quickly, before we finish, one thing I wanted to ask you about is we've mentioned a bit about Spark Penketh, which is the makerspace that you're running, first school makerspace in the country. And now I know you mentioned this a bit already, but one of the things that you guys are doing there, which I really love, is building making and physical computing and other things into other subjects and making them, you know, and using that as a learning tool, if you want, and helping the kids to kind of learn about things like biology and physics and, English, all kind of, I'm just going to list off subjects now, all kinds of subjects based on that sort of thing. So tell us very quickly about like an example, give us like one example of your favorite thing that you've made with kids that's helped them to learn some other subject.
I think some of my favourite thing that I've built with kids that help them slow into the subject, the current one, it's hard to pick a favourite because there's so many that go on in our space, but actually the current favourite has got to be our augmented reality project for history. So a whole bunch of our students have just recently been working with our museum in Warrington to scan and 3D print and then augment information on a series of prints and a series of objects that were at our local museum. This one, some on the Aztecs currently, and then use them in lessons. So, you know, they are creating the things that then they're using. We get lots. We've got a biology project has been running for a while now, that is now in its third iteration, where they're building wearable technology to demonstrate biology concepts in lessons. And then we've got geography is just about to start with the seismograph project, so they're going to be using sensors to learn about earthquakes. So we use a lot of very technology, but we tend to get our kids to direct that sort of technology as they go along. We get them to build some of the projects and then implement them into the curriculum. So that's how we embed it into the everyday lesson, you know, not just, you know, random lessons. So you don't just go, we get a skill pathway alongside our GCSEs, alongside our main core curriculum. And then that just teaches them the skills to use in the average makerspace. And then they can come in and pursue what interests them. And then you have, obviously, the ones that we embed in the curriculum that are ones that we get our teachers to do, and we get them to embed the whole thing into biology, geography, history. And they do various ones that they feel like are things they want. Quite often they ask to demonstrate concepts that are very tricky to demonstrate normally. So like the biology cell one was solely because it's quite tricky to demonstrate actual scaling on microscopes, you know, mm-hmm. to young people. So they wanted to show how you can scale cells up. So cool, we built cool. giant cells.
Wow.
So
cool,
yeah, there's
cool.
some really cool ones.
You know, what's funny is like an hour has gone by already, and I feel like we just barely scratched the surface, especially like the issues about privacy and about bringing more open source into the community. You're going to have to come back on again in maybe 6 months or so, and we can do like part two of this show. But I'm sure there'll be plenty more. Oh, we can bring you on about time OgCamp's on, so that way we can promote OgCamp. That'd be cool.
Yeah. I'd be delighted to come on again and have a good chat about it. So, yeah, it does feel like because education is such a broad domain, I think people forget there's so many things going on in it. So, you know, I'm quite interested to reach out to more of the open source community and say, you know, think about education. You know, when you're building things or you're doing things, you know, education's one that you can make a really big impact in. So,
okay. Yeah,
I'd be delighted.
Knowing that you come back on in about 6 months, is there any burning thing that you need to share today that our audience needs to be aware of that we didn't talk about already?
Not really burning right now. I'd probably say check out Liverpool Make Fest if you want to see some interesting things on things that are going to be making on the 29th of June. We're going to be streaming it live across the British Library, so you'll be able to catch that. Check out OgCamp as he's coming up. And I'd probably say definitely reach out to me if you are interested in doing an open source project. I'm very interested in putting a very big database together for teachers that could showcase to them in a simplistic way how all of the current data is being used in the educational apps that are out there. So me and Dan have been talking about this for a little while now. And I think cool. That's one of those ones that I probably need partners for. So if you want to get involved in that, please get in touch.
Okay, so two final questions, or else my audience actually emails me and says, why didn't you ask her this? So what's your favorite what's your favorite programming language?
My favorite programming language, we do it in Python all the time, but actually it sounds daft, but my favorite programming language is probably going to be HTML and CSS because it's the most accessible one for kids to do that they can just do. And it doesn't involve blocks. So when they do it, it looks like a real programming language. So I teach as young as 4 and 5 that in our primary outreach. And that gets them understanding what it really looks like as you go forward. So that's my favorite one because you can teach it without a set of blocks to start with. I don't mind blocks later on if you get the concepts, but I like you to see what it looks like in the first place.
And what text editor do you use?
Pardon?
What text editor do you use?
We currently use Mew for that. So we put it out and we use text editors in Mew for that. And we use, I use Trinket for that as well to teach. Mm-hmm. So that's a really nice one that's out there that is dead easy. You know, you can use that just with kids and it can just show up on that one. So yeah, there's quite a few that we use across. So it depends on what. At the moment I've been in all in 3D printing. So I've been in CAD and 3D printing for about 2 months now because we do it in very big blocks. So I've been in 3D printing, and next term I'm coming to going back into Arduino. So I'll be back in C++.
Okay, cool. And what do you use for C++?
Arduinos we use for that. And to teach the basics of that. It's nice and easy, and it also lets them do things on robotics and lets them do various kinds of bits that are more kind of hands-on for them. So it gets them to see the benefits of that.
Awesome. Okay, it's been a pleasure talking with you. It's been wonderful, and we ran way out of time, so I have to let you go. But definitely, we'll invite you back just before Og Camp so you can help promote that. And there's so many other issues we still could have gotten to today, but we didn't have time. Time marches on. Thank you very much, Caroline. That was been a wonderful conversation.
Very welcome. Thank you.
That was Caroline Keep talking about all sorts of really wonderful issues. What do you think there, Dan?
Yeah, it's great. I mean, I knew a lot of those answers, so I was trying to feed in questions that I knew the answers to. But yeah, it's a really big issue, and obviously, it sounds cheesy, but you know, as the lyrics go to the song, "Children are the future." I believe children are the future, and you know, we need to get them involved in open source and so on like that. Also, I know we're running out of time very quickly. If you want to hear us, me and Caroline talk a lot more, we do our own podcast, which is unfortunately not safe for work, but it's about comics and other things. If you want to hear that, it's unattested.club. It's Tales of the Unattested, so you can check that out.
Not the Tales of the Unit Tested. That's a different
show. Although that's the spin-off that we're going to do, isn't it, Randall, because you said that.
Yeah, exactly. I remember you introducing that a couple of years ago, and I thought, well, we should definitely have a show that's something else like that. Okay, so as I said at the top of the show, we went from having one guest lined up to having eight guests lined up. Well, one of them has just been finished, so let's talk about the other seven. Who's coming up? Just coming up next week. But it's next Friday, not next Wednesday. We normally tape on Wednesdays, but we were preempted this upcoming week by the network, by the Twit Network. So on next Friday, we have Clearly Defined and our parent organization, the Open Source Initiative, are on a mission to help FOSS projects thrive by being clearly defined. Lack of clarity around licenses and security vulnerabilities reduces engagement. That means fewer users, fewer contributors, and a smaller community. And I believe Simon Phipps brought me this guest. Aon is our token blockchain for the next 8 weeks. At the root of the Aon network is a purpose-built public blockchain called Aon 1. Of course, they wouldn't call it Aon 2 because it's got to be the number one, right? Anyway, that's 2 weeks from now. Rescheduled, Magalix. Apparently, they missed my emails because it went into their spam box, so I didn't get to talk to them about finalizing the show, and so we had that blank week a few weeks back. It's a Kubernetes Smart Manager. You get insight about utilization and resources distributions in a few minutes. Get recommendations. You control when and how to apply recommendations. So that's pretty cool. Also, just added to the schedule is Flexera Open Source Report. It's the annual vulnerability review by Secunia Research at Flexera Software. They analyze the evolution of software security from a vulnerability perspective. And it presents global data on the prevalence of vulnerabilities and the availability of patches to map the security threats to IT infrastructures almost entirely around open source. Also just added to the schedule, Railroader. And I believe this is the third different subject for David A. Wheeler. We've had him on a couple of other subjects back in the past, but he actually suggested himself in the my call to action here. Railroader is a security static analysis tool for finding vulnerabilities in applications that use Ruby on Rails. So if you're a Rails user, you definitely want to tune in for that one. Also just added to the schedule, I can just say it in front of every show, I guess, Fluid Keys. Fluid Keys builds on OpenPGP and makes it easy to implement great security across your organization. Lots of cool things in there about that. Also just added to the schedule, a final one for this week, ETSync, something like that. It's a secure, end-to-end encrypted and privacy-respecting sync for your contacts, calendars, and tasks. Awesome. We've got a bunch of great shows, a bunch of variety shows. We're about probably are still in flight trying to figure out what to what day they want to pick, but I've had to actually open up all the way to the end of April now because we're just filling in up all our shows. So you go to twitch.tv/floss, and that's the homepage for this show, and linked from there is the upcoming guest link, and you can do that. If you have other suggestions, again, please tell the project leader or community coordinator to email me, especially if it's not cryptocurrency. We have a live stream at 9:30 a.m. Pacific time on Wednesdays normally. It's going to be Friday next week now, so don't get your day mixed up. If you look tune in to us on Wednesday, you're not going to see us. That's at live.twit.tv. We took a couple questions from there today. You can follow us at Floss Weekly on Google Plus for another few weeks, and then I have to figure out some other sort of solution for that. At Floss Weekly will remain in place though on Twitter. You can follow me again at Randall L. Schwartz on Google Plus for another few weeks, and then at Merlin on Twitter, and that will stay in place. I will be at Scale 2019. I don't know what it's called. Let's see. I think it's like Scale 17 or Scale 18, one of those weird numbering. In Pasadena, just in a couple weeks. Please, if you're there, come up and say hi. Say I watch the show, and you know, tell me what you like about it or what you don't like about it. I take criticism just like anybody else. Dan, you want to plug anything?
No, go to danlynch.org. Also, yeah, OggCamp is coming up, which we mentioned. Biggest free and open source event in the UK coming up in October. OggCamp.org. That's the place.
And Dan, wait, thanks for bringing today's guest to the show and being the co-host as well. I really appreciate that. And always welcome to be on the show as often as you want.
That's great. Always great to be here. Thanks very much.
Cool. Your absence was definitely noted back when you had to take a couple of your breaks. So I'm glad you're back. Mm-hmm. Glad you're back and doing the whole thing. All right. Well, we'll see you all again next week, next Friday on Floss Weekly.